and you may proceed.
Your Honor, I'm here on behalf of Calvin Smith. Calvin Smith was convicted in jury trial of multiple counts, 12 of the 13 counts of various sexual assault, ultimately sentenced resulting in 41 to 110 years, 35 of those years seemed to be a hard time, meaning no good time. There are a number of issues, as our brief indicates, before this court that we feel need to be addressed. The first issue that I think is most important for this court to look at would be our issue under prior inconsistent statements. As the court is aware, under 27801, there are certain requirements that are mandated under 27801 for a prior consistent statement to come in. We feel that the district court's ruling in this case is particularly probative. The reason being that during the trial in this case, State v. Smith, there was absolutely no direct evidence whatsoever tying Mr. Smith to these crimes. The only evidence that came in came from the testimony from the two young girls and what was deemed to be prior consistent statements concerning a note from friends of the girls. What's particularly troubling, as our brief indicates, that the court's ruling in this particular case deemed these as prior consistent statements assumes that the girls' statements to the two friends are the prior consistent statements. Our contention that the prior consistent statements are in fact the declarant or the note and the poem, not the statements made by girls to the two individuals. Because of that, then, the declarant being the note and the poem, which were never introduced into evidence and could not be produced, the defense then was unable to cross-examine. We can see that there was a recent issue of fabrication, as our brief indicates. Most importantly, the defense was placed in the untenable position of being unable to cross-examine and disprove a negative that the contents of the note and poem as outlined would be, in fact, prior consistent statements. The state's argument is that the defense has waived this argument by not objecting as prior consistent statements. We disagree with that assertion in that as the statements came in, the arguments made at that particular time were to hearsay, foundation, relevance. However, on page 6 of the state's brief, they acknowledged that the court made a ruling, in fact, that the defense had made a tenable argument that these particular statements were prior inconsistent statements. In fact, a sidebar was held by the court after the admission of the testimony, in which the district court
said... Well, wait a minute. Is the sidebar recorded?
It is not recorded.
So it's not part of the record?
Correct, Judge. What is recorded, though, is the court's finding based upon the discussion off the sidebar, in which the court notes that the district court is going to make a determination that these statements are prior consistent statements. So the objections made by counsel at the time were appropriate, and it's our contention that those issues were not waived.
Did the court focus on what the prior consistent statements were?
Yes.
And what did the court determine the prior consistent statements were?
The prior consistent statements, and I can detail as to each statement if the court so desires. Prior consistent statements that are issue concern the testimony of Natalie James, Colin Ryan. There is a third person that I think that the court mistakenly left off in addressing, that would be the testimony of Kevin Vick. It's our contention because the court did not make a determination that the testimony given by Ms. Dick was a prior consistent statement, and it's clearly inadmissible hearsay, and the court erred in its ruling in that regard. So, second issue, Judge, that Your Honors, that I feel is most important to be addressed is our argument.
Before you go on there, it's my understanding that you think the prior consistent statements are the documents themselves and they no longer exist?
That is correct.
What about the statements that it seems were made to the friend or the various friends? Aren't those prior consistent statements?
What I think is distinguishable in this particular case is that the documents themselves, the only testimony that the friends had was the reading of the notes, not told by the two children. The friends testified that they read a note and they read a poem. There was no testimony whatsoever that those issues were read by the girls to the particular individuals.
And there was no discussion about he touched me?
That is correct. Both Ms. James indicated during her testimony that there was no further discussion, and any ultimate discussion of the item came years later. So the defense is left in the untenable position to argue a negative that the contents note that never existed or was never produced at trial, or the poem were in fact what they reported to be, but were consistent as to what girls testified that they read.
Assuming you're correct, why wouldn't this be harmless error?
Because as I indicated to this court, there was absolutely no direct evidence tying Mr. Smith to these particular crimes. So the jury found him guilty of circumstantial evidence. It's our contention that the two corroborative testimony from Kendra James and Colin Ryan, indirectly Kendra Dick, played a large part in the conviction of Mr. Smith.
So without them, it was a he said, she said.
That is correct. That brings me to my next argument, would be our contention that the admission of Exhibit 25, which would our contention be an exculpatory document, which came out during the middle of trial, while we concede through no direct lying on the part of the state, constitutes a Brady violation. And it's our contention that this...
What is Exhibit 25?
Exhibit 25, Your Honor, was a report of a medical examination done on a younger child, which indicated that despite her reports of being sexually assaulted every day for a year as a young child by a very large gentleman, there was absolutely no physical signs whatsoever of sexual assault.
Did you ask for a continuance? There was a 12-hour hurry-scurry to get an expert, so you did get an expert.
We did get an expert, Your Honor. However, the problem was that the state's expert, when the state moved to endorse Dr. Susan Haney on March 3rd, prior to the trial beginning, the district court, in my opinion, it's our contention, did follow what it was required to do and required the state to produce an affidavit as to what Dr. Haney's testimony would be. In no point in time, obviously, because the state didn't know about or claimed they did not know about Exhibit 25, was her testimony concerning that on that affidavit. Therefore, when she was allowed to expand her testimony on direct and explain why she was not called in Exhibit 25 as a doctor, she was called as the director of Project Harmony, she was allowed to expand her testimony to explain why, in her medical opinion, that no physical evidence would exist. It put the defense in an untenable position at 9 o'clock during the recess during trial to find their own experts to explain. So the fact that we were allowed to take the deposition of Dr. Haney is irrelevant since we had no knowledge about Exhibit 25. It's our opinion that this court has dabbled in applying Brady during a trial in State versus Lincoln, where this court said, if we can't get to materiality, we're certainly not going to address the term of whether Brady applies during a trial.
Now, Exhibit 25 was a medical report of a medical examination of this victim, and it was in the detective's file, and he had never moved it over or sent it to anybody or put it in the Project Harmony files, Mike. My understanding,
correct.
Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay. So it never got to the prosecutors, it never got to anyone other than his file, and then in the middle of the trial they bring it up. Is that basically correct. What happened? All right.
It might be argued that you could have asked for a continuance. Would that have cured any problem here?
Well, that's a difficult question to answer because that depends on then whether Dr. Haney at that point in time again would have been allowed to continue her testimony about the contents of Exhibit 25. It places the defense in a very difficult position because if you ask for a mistrial on what just on the admission of Exhibit 25 appears to be exculpatory. However, if Dr. Haney is allowed to testify what she believes, and it's our continued, not only with the Brady violation, but a violation of Daubert, that she is allowed to explain studies that the defense has no opportunity to counter whatsoever, then it places, it's clearly harmful error that the defense at that point in time cannot overcome. It's also our contention that the district court misapplied, as our brief indicates, misapplied Castillas and made sentences on 5, 7, and 8 consecutive when this court in Burney has determined that that's not applicable.
What should be the remedy? Remand for resentencing?
Yes.
Didn't the judge also say he would have made them consecutive anyway?
Well, I think that I know that the state wants to go to that second half of the court sentencing to assume that that's what the court said anyway. But if we look further, the judge also made the comment that as I read the case law with respect to the three charges, 5, 7, and 8, that carry mandatory minimums, this court must impose consecutive sentences to those three charges. If you look up the term must in Webster's dictionary, it says as required by rule or law. So I don't think we can then climb inside the judge's head and say he would have done so anyway. Never got to that point. He didn't
say something else along the lines of even if that's not right, I still would do it.
That is correct, but I think just a misapplication along the first end doesn't cure what he thought on the second. It's also our contention, Judge.
Thank you very much. Ms. Klein, good morning.
Please support Mr. Chief Justice. I'm Kimberly Klein, Assistant Attorney General, representing the state in this matter. I want to focus on an issue first different than that which was argued by counsel, and that's, frankly, oddly, the sufficiency of the evidence in this case, because this is somewhat of a peculiar case, and I expect that these circumstances may start arising in different contexts more and more frequently. Three of the counts charged against the defendant were visual depiction of sexual explicit conduct involving a child. The testimony as it came to light was that one of the victims, SD, had testified that the defendant had taken four photographs of her, three of which were the basis of the charges, that depicted her by her description in sexually explicit positions. She described that he took these with a Polaroid camera. She watched the photos come out of camera, basically, and observed him to take those photographs and place them in a brown photo album next to some nude photos of her mother. He put the album either in a drawer or in a top shelf of the closet, I can't remember which. Police got a search warrant, found the album. When the album was recovered, the photographs involving SD were gone. They were not present in the album, but the photographs that SD had said were basically facing her mother, that were facing her, were present in the album. When SD testified, she gave a rather explicit description of each of the three photos. One of them said it depicted her with her knees in the air, and the photograph displayed her vaginal area. The second photo that he had taken her of her had her on her hands and knees. He pushed her down so that she said her butt was up in the air, and the photograph displayed her backside, including her vaginal area. And the third photograph was of her depicted basically from the neck down, laying on her back, and completely nude, laying on the bed. The state proceeded to trial on the theory that these photos had depicted erotic nudity as defined by statute, meaning the display of the female genitals or pubic area, and or the human female breast or developing breast area of the human female child. The defendant said, you can't convict me because this requires an actual visual depiction, and I think the district court allowed it to go to the jury, which determined that the photos, at least once upon a time, did exist, and that they depicted what the victim said they depicted, and there's very little case law, frankly, across the country, but that does exist suggests that you can, in fact, prove visual depiction of sexually explicit conduct, or however each state or jurisdiction phrases it, by circumstantial evidence. And the case law is clear that circumstantial evidence is not inherently less probative than direct evidence, and a fact proved by circumstantial evidence is nonetheless a fact proved. Based on the description of the photographs that SD had observed, taken of her, she was the victim, if you will, of the photographs. She observed them as they came out and developed from the Polaroid camera. She observed them as the defendant put them into the photo album. And so she knew exactly what was taken of her and what was depicted in those photographs.
Is there authority to the contrary that the absence of direct proof of ephemera will defeat the case?
I haven't come across any that specifically says you cannot do it. What I have come across says that it can be done, but they require, those cases require that there be essentially a very explicit description of what was depicted in the photos. And most of them, frankly, the descriptions that were given generally failed to meet that that level of proof. However, I think based on the charge in this particular case and the victim's testimony about what was actually depicted in those photos, which she saw and which had been taken of her, I think that those that the circumstantial evidence that those had been taken, placed in an album, and then at some point in time prior to the seizure of the album by the police had been removed from that, is sufficient to demonstrate circumstantial evidence that those photographs had in fact been taken once upon a time and at some point in time had been removed and or destroyed by the defendant.
Well, once you've got the victim that says, all right, he had me pose and do this and that and the other thing and showing the vaginal area, etc., and then says he took a picture of it, haven't you got everything you need?
I think so. The victim's testimony should be sufficient to establish the elements of...
It may go to weight, but what the finder of fact thinks about it. But.
I think that's exactly right.
Here we have the rather archaic situation of an actual photograph being produced. Suppose you have the same facts, but a digital camera and the victim can't tell whether a photo was actually taken or not. Is the crime committed?
Well, that would depend. I would guess that would depend some on how we're going to define a visual depiction. If he's using his phone or camera or whatever and essentially lining up a photo but decides not to take it or whatever, I'm supposing that would depend on what you call a visual depiction. I don't know how to answer that.
So we'll save that for another day.
Let's do that.
All right. Why don't we talk about consistent statements?
Okay. The consistent statements in this case, I think the only one really that's at issue is the Natalie James one. Natalie James testified that she'd been friends with A.L., the other victim, and that... some point in time in fifth or sixth grade, A.L. had told her that she wanted to tell her something and gave her a note, and the note was read, and the defendant objected on hearsay, and the note said that one night the defendant basically had gotten drunk and come home and come into A.L.'s room and sexually assaulted her. I think, first of all, I don't think there's any dispute that there's a charge of recent fabrication, so I think we get over that hurdle without any difficulty. Smith argues that it's actually the note that is the declarant, but I don't think that's really accurate. If you look at the definition under 27801, a statement is either oral or written, or nonverbal conduct if it's intended as an assertion, which clearly was in this case, and a declarant is called a person who makes a statement. So a person, the declarant, can make a written assertion, which is a statement. So it's basically the declarant is the person who authored the statement, which would be in this case A.L. A.L. was subject to cross-examination. She testified at trial. She wasn't really asked about the contents of the note, although she was certainly available to have done so. Prior consistent statement is admissible if the declarant testifies, which she did, and is subject to cross-examination concerning the statement. He didn't ask her about it, but that doesn't mean she wasn't subject to it. And it's consistent with her testimony and offered to rebut a charge of recent fabrication. And that's what the purpose of it was. I think that's the only, by my read of the arguments and the court's ruling, that's really the only prior consistent statement that's ultimately preserved and at issue for this court, and I think that the district court properly found that it was a prior consistent statement based on the facts and the testimonies that were used.
Before your time runs out, would you like to talk about the sentencing issue?
Yes, Your Honor. The sentencing was, well, the district court was incorrectly relying on Casillas at the time it made its sentencing. But if you read the entirety of the judge's sentencing comments, I think the error is clearly harmless error based on what he said. Judge Arterburn said, as I read the case law, with respect to the three charges that carry mandatory minimums, the court must impose consecutive sentences with respect to those, which at that point in time, as a result of Burney, was actually correct. But the court went on to say it would seem to the court that even if it weren't required, that would be appropriate given the time frames. And I think that's really what's critical about this, is he misunderstood the case law. But he said, even if I didn't have to sentence you consecutively, I'd go ahead and do it anyway. And I think that that renders his misapprehension.
And that would be what he would do if it was remanded back to him again.
I have absolutely no doubt that's exactly what he'd do, based on what he said. He said, this is what I would do even if I didn't have to. And because he actually didn't have to, he would still probably, I think he would definitely go ahead and do just exactly what he did.
And what he did is authorized.
What he did is absolutely authorized. And unless there are additional questions, I'm almost out of time. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do we have time for rebuttal?
She is over.
There is no time for rebuttal. We will go on to the next case of the day, which is State versus Sarah A. Cullen. Is it Mr. Grove?